Thank you very much. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. It's going to be a short course, and inshallah, in the course of these few evenings, I will try to explore, or we try to explore together, the way the faith and akhlaq are related to each other. As the title of the course mentions, the impact of akhlaq on faith, and of course we would look at the opposite as well, the impact of faith on akhlaq, because they are mutually related to each other. So the deeper gets the faith, the better should get the akhlaq. The better gets the akhlaq, the deeper should get the faith. Now, there are certain preliminaries that we have to discuss first. Now, as an introduction, we have to accept, first of all, and this has been a point of contention about theologians in early decades and centuries of Islam, whether faith is susceptible to decretion and reduction, whether faith could be reduced or increased. There were certain theologians who used to say that faith cannot be increased or decreased, because you either have faith in God or do not have faith in God. You cannot believe more or believe less. You either believe in God or do not believe in God. Now, we'll discuss about faith shortly, and we'll see that faith is more than just belief or knowing, and therefore it is susceptible to different depths or different levels. So faith is not a monolithic entity and will intensify or weaken due to certain factors. It's very, very difficult to define faith, how it comes about, how it intensifies, how it reduces in intensity. One thing which we can say is about faith, probably the best definition, you may help me as well, is a sort of attraction. You are attracted to something, and then you have a conviction towards it. We'll of course define faith a little bit further later on. However, just have this at the back of your mind. How can we define faith? What is it? How does it come? How does it go? It's very difficult. However, it's something which most of us experience in our heart and soul. Now, one of the most influential factors which has a direct bearing on faith, of course, is akhlaq. It immensely impacts the faith and is hugely impacted by it. Now, the course would try to explore this to find out how are they related. Sometimes we see in our traditions that faith is defined by certain traits and by certain character. If you have that character, you have faith. If you don't have that character, you don't have faith. So we see that they are used interchangeably. Akhlaq and faith are used interchangeably, although we know that they are very different. They are very different things. However, because one manifests the other, they have been used in our traditions for the ease of understanding. Now, in other words, we can say that faith has different levels. Just take it as face value now. We'll discuss it later. And we can say that each level requires its own akhlaq. Say, if, for example, you have four levels of faith, at each level, you would manifest a different sort of akhlaq, which is very much suitable to that level of faith. And if you like, we can say akhlaq manifests itself based on the level of faith, the other way around as well. Now, you may say that we have secular akhlaq as well. Akhlaq which is not based on faith, which is just based on human consciousness. That's right. That's true. And that means that if you have human, that conscience which produces certain type of akhlaq, like honesty, for example, if you have faith, that conscience should be conscious in you, should manifest itself. You may not have faith and it manifests itself as well, but it cannot be that you have faith and it does not manifest itself. I wonder if it's clear or not. So honesty, say for example, honesty can be found in a person without faith, because that comes from human conscience. That's the fitrah of human being that Allah has endowed in us. However, faith cannot come without honesty. So faith and honesty are related to each other in a one-way sort of road rather than in a two-way relationship. Now, let's talk about akhlaq now. What do we mean by akhlaq? What is akhlaq? Akhlaq is the plural of khulq or khuluq. Both are the same thing. Khulq or khuluq, which is the character, which means character. Now, one khulq is a certain trait showing itself in a person. Then we have different traits showing, making the overall character, we call it akhlaq, of that person. Now, the Quran says about the Prophet, peace be on him, that innaka la'ala khuluqin azim. You are on a great character, or you possess a great character. And this shows the character, khuluq or akhlaq, can somehow differ. Honesty can differ in terms of intensity as well, or generosity, forbearance, they can differ in terms of intensity in different people. So when Allah says innaka la'ala khuluqin azim, means that these character, these traits which make your character, are very much intensified in you. Now, the reason the character is called khulq is because it establishes in the soul like khalq or khilqa. Khilqa is what? Creation, isn't it? Khalq is creation. Khilqa is creation. Now, khulq and khalq are very closely related to each other in terms of etymology. And because khulq becomes like the second nature of human being, that's why we call it khulq. It's like khalq, it's like khilqa, like creation, like fitra of human being. It becomes the second creation of the person. Therefore, fleeting traits are not akhlaq. Now, you, for example, pass by a person who is in great need, and suddenly you are moved. Suddenly you are moved with emotions, and then you help them. As a matter of course, you usually don't help people. But sometimes you are moved by certain circumstances. This is not called your akhlaq. It's just a fleeting sort of trait. So a generous person is someone who always gives. Not sometimes give because of, for example, emotions or certain circumstances, or because they are moved by certain situation. We don't call it akhlaq. So the fleeting traits are not called akhlaq. Akhlaq, according to Raghib, khalq and khulq. Our khalqa, you know, is our creation, or khalq is our creation. Khalq and khulq principally mean the same thing. Raghib is one of those etymologists which have written a book on etymology of the terms of the Quran. And according to him, khalq and khulq principally mean the same thing. However, khalq is used for the forms and creations that could be seen by the sight, by eyes. Like, for example, you see me, my khalqa is, for example, the color of my eyes, the color of my skin, my height, my construction. This is my khalq, you see it. And khulq is used for those qualities in a person which you cannot see by eyes. You can perceive it by insight, or you can perceive them by the consequences of those things. So khulq is used for the traits that could be perceived by insight. Now, why I have elaborated on that is to bring close to our minds that when we talk about khulq or akhlaq, we are talking about the second nature of every person. We are not talking about fleeting reactions. For example, I'm not a brave person, but in a certain situation, suddenly I do something which people say, how brave he is. But usually I'm quite a timid person, for example. Khulq or akhlaq is a second nature that when you face different circumstances, you don't need to think to act about it or based on it. It just comes out like generosity. And this is what we talk about, the akhlaq of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It comes, it flows out because he's lush and he's full of those traits. So therefore, khulq is like the second creation or second nature from which the good or bad traits emanate. You can have good akhlaq, you can have bad akhlaq. You can have good khulq and bad khulq. Now, we have another term that we have to discuss here, which is very important, and that is malaka. Malaka. Of course, malaka probably, in our language, malaka is queen. I don't know whether in your language it's queen as well or not, but this is certainly doesn't mean queen. It is something which is in your possession, malaka. A khulq which has turned into the second nature is called a malaka. That means you own it, you possess it, and you act according to it. Or vice versa, it possesses you. Of course, it possesses you, especially after we die. After we die, these traits, which have become established traits of our nature, they possess us. You cannot act but according to those traits. There is no volition out there. You say that, I want to, now that I have seen God, now that I have seen how the creation is, I want to act differently. You cannot, they possess you. It's just like you are possessed by a jinn or something. We are possessed by our akhlaq in this world. And actually, the whole purpose of creation of this world is to develop these traits, to develop malakat, the malaka. As our bodies were formed in the wombs of our mothers, our akhlaq, our traits, our khuluq should be formed here. And then when we go to the next world, we have both of them together. And a malaka is something which possesses you, especially in next world. You possess it in this world, it possesses you in the next world. You probably remember the verse in Surah Mujadala, if I'm not mistaken. يَوْمَ يَبْعَثُهُمُ اللَّهُ جَمِيعًا فَيَحْلِفُونَ لَهُ كَمَا يَحْلِفُونَ لَكُمْ. They used to swear for you in this world lies. And when Allah resurrects them, they swear lies to Allah. Why? Because they are possessed by these traits. They cannot act differently. And every trait has its own place in the hereafter. So we are placed either in different levels of paradise or different levels of hell according to these traits which possess us. And Allah says that you do not act outside this trait. And if perchance, or if Allah has mercy on you and brings you out of hell, for example, brings those people in the hell out, and there they say, oh God, we want to repent, we don't want to behave like this anymore, bring us out, we wouldn't behave like this anymore. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, no, if we bring them out, they return to what they used to do. It's now out of frustration, out of pain that they are saying these things. But when they come out, again, because they are possessed by those traits, by those malakats, they behave in the same way. وَلَوْ رُدُّوا لَعَادُوا لَمَا نُهُوا عَنْهُ. If we return them or bring them out, they will behave in the same way that they used to behave previously. It's very difficult. But as soon as in hell, as soon as we change, truly, if these malakats, somehow we get ourselves free, rid of these malakats in one way or another, then of course we move higher and we come out eventually out of the different darakat of hell. So, malaka is a trait which you possess, in the sense that, as I said, you don't need to think when you want to act according to it. It's your nature, like breathing. We don't think when we breathe. When you face a needy person, you don't think that I have to help them. If we think, which we usually do, or it's because it's not our malaka yet. Generosity is not our malaka yet. If we do not think and we give, it means that it has become our malaka. Among human qualities, those which are fleeting and accidental are called hal. Now, in mysticism, we had this hal and maqam, if you remember. Those of you who had this mysticism course. Hal are those fleeting moments which a mystic experiences, flashes of a sort of unseen coming to the heart and going. It is not stable. It just comes and goes, shows itself and goes. It's just like a sort of thunder coming and going. But if they continue like this in purification, they reach at a status where they become established in those experiences. And this is their maqam, their position. Now, in akhlaq, we also have hal, which I mentioned, that you are just moved by a situation. Or you feel like doing something at a moment, but not at other moments. This is hal. This is not akhlaq. If these behaviors become established in you, then it becomes your malaka. So in Irfan we have hal and maqam, in akhlaq we have hal and malaka. Malaka is the established trait. While hal is emotional reaction to things. So now I have given another example here. If you smile occasionally or shout occasionally, you are not regarded as good or bad-tempered. But if you usually smile or usually shout, you have the malaka which shows your akhlaq, that we say is bad-tempered or good-tempered. So it's the usual, continuous quality of the soul, which we regard to be akhlaq of a person, not occasional outpours of certain traits and certain qualities. That we do not call it akhlaq. It's, the Quran also says, الَّذِينَ يَجْتَنِبُونَ كَبَائِرَ الْإِثْمِ وَالْفَوَاحِشِ إِلَّا اللَّمَمِ. Those who avoid grave sins and grave indecencies, except certain outpours of it. Lamam is something, those things which just come spontaneously without you wanting it. Because you're faced with a situation. Allah says, we forgive those things. We forgive those things. But if you continuously do these evils, then of course they possess you. And then even God cannot help you. In the sense that it is according to the system that God has created, you would automatically be driven by these malakat which you have. The good news is that occasional sins, occasional bad-temperedness is all forgiven by Allah. Forgiven in the sense that when we go to the next world, we don't see them because they do not possess us. What is important and we have to avoid is to be possessed by a evil malaka, by an evil trait. That would not leave us. That would fester us all through to the gates of paradise. Inshallah, there we will receive shafa and it will, we'll get rid of them. But if we have a bad trait as a malaka, that would not leave us. It would fester us in the grave. It would fester us when we are raised from the grave. It would fester us in all different stages of Qiyamah, because it's part of us. It's our second nature. Just like our bodies are formed again, that is somehow stored in our soul, and it will come back with our soul to the bodies, and it will fester us all through the journey until the very end. Now, as I said, if you have the malaka, you don't need to think, to act upon it. It is spontaneous, it comes. Just like akhlaq of the Prophet, for example, that we see. He always smiled because that was his malaka. He always was polite because it was his malaka. And all other traits that we know from the Prophet. It moves you in a spontaneous way, for it is like your second nature. Now, so it now becomes clear, what is the science of akhlaq? What is the science of akhlaq? Anyone? Without looking at the notes? It's not a good akhlaq to look at the notes and tell me. Yeah? Yeah? Science to know how to establish good malakat in our soul and avoid evil malakat or get rid of them. And also, prior to that, science of knowing what is a good malaka and what's a bad malaka as well. So we have to know first what is good and what is bad. Now, for knowing what is good and what is bad, that is the most difficult part of the science of akhlaq, of course. I don't go into that because we have different schools here. Utilitarianism, for example, or akhlaq based on virtue, or akhlaq based on taqwa. These are different theories of how we distinguish between good and bad. What is good? Some people say what brings the utmost pleasure to greatest number of people. This is utilitarianism, that you look at the use of a trait, for example, rather than other things. According to the Quran, akhlaq is based on taqwa. What comes out of your soul based on fear of God, that is a good akhlaq. What comes based on other things, that is not, of course, regarded as the highest virtue. Although there are certain virtues in human beings which are, as I said, secular. We all show certain traits which are regarded to be good by everyone. So the science of akhlaq is a discipline which studies the malakat, which is the plural of malaka, of human soul. Which one is good, which one is bad, how to get rid of the bad one, how to acquire the good one. Now, a malaka could be a virtue or a vice, as we mentioned, and the science of akhlaq distinguishes between the two and help formation of good malaka and removal of evil malaka. Is that clear? Up till now. So far, so good. Okay. Now we go to more difficult areas on faith. Here we have to admit we don't know much, and it's something which is very difficult to analyze. Akhlaq we could analyze more easily, but faith is very difficult to analyze. However, just we explore different areas here. Faith is a conviction which requires acknowledgement of the heart, confession of the tongue, and action of the body. Now, of course, this is not unanimously agreed by everyone, because some people, like Murja in Islam or Protestants in Christianity, they say faith is just acknowledgement of the heart, nothing more. It does not require action. If you believe in something, that is faith, and it cannot increase or decrease. And the salvation is based on that, not on anything else. Well, the Quran refutes this very clearly. Refutes this and somehow approves of it, isn't it? Because it says, "Alladhina amanu wa amilus salihat." Now, are those amalus salihat, the good acts, are they part of faith? Or they're separate from faith? Now you tell me, what do you understand by this? Alladhina amanu wa amilus salihat. Is this amalus salihat part of faith or separate from faith or different from it? What do you understand from this very oft repeated phrase in the Quran? Alladhina amanu wa amilus salihat. On the face of it, there are two different things, isn't it? On the face of it, there are two different things. Now, what we can also say this, that people can do good acts without faith, isn't it? People can do good acts. I mean, we have many people, they do lots of charitable acts. They have lots of the sacrifices we have seen from people who do not believe in God at all. So, those who amilu salihat, they do salihat, they may not have faith. But the Quran says both of them are necessary. It doesn't necessarily mean that good acts could not be part of faith. It doesn't necessarily mean that. But it's very dodgy. According to traditions which have defined faith for us by the A'imma alayhi salam and by certain traditions from the Prophet, the good acts or action is regarded to be part of faith. So, the stronger your faith, the better your action. That means action is part of the faith. That is probably the meaning. Because the stronger your faith, the better your action, and therefore action is a consequence of a stronger faith or is part of that faith, probably. Now, the Prophet, peace be on him, is reported from him and also from other A'imma alayhi salam as well, in different wordings, al-iman aqdun bil-qalb wa lafdun bil-lisan wa amalun bil-jawarih. Faith is, I haven't given the translation here. The translation is actually the above. It's acknowledgement of the heart, confession of the tongue, and action of the body. That means faith should move you towards certain acts, should move you there. Now, I said conviction. Faith is a conviction. Conviction could intensify, isn't it? You have conviction towards something which is somehow stronger from conviction of other people towards that thing. It's different from just mere belief, that you either believe or something or do not believe in something. When the Quran talks about faith and taqwa and all these things, it presumes that all of us believe in God. However, it talks about different levels of that faith or belief, which is conviction or attraction or something like that. Now, therefore, faith is different from mere belief or knowledge. It is a confession and conviction of the heart which moves the tongue and the limbs. Would anyone disagree with this? In your experience of your faith, does this make sense? Would anyone have experience of faith? Yeah.
Would you say that if you didn't move the tongue and the limbs for a momentary period, therefore faith would not be there? If that's the implication, then it's not just because one may act differently in certain periods of his life, I wouldn't say it would necessarily mean he did not have faith at that time. He may have been weak.
Yeah. So the conviction may become so weak that it just remains in the heart and it doesn't do more, okay? But We don't call that real faith. We don't call that real faith. It's just a very weak conviction or acknowledgement, that's all. Now, the Murji'a believed that faith is only that acknowledgement of the heart. And we had two different types of Murji'a. Murji'atul Bid'ah, which believe that action has no impact at all. And Murji'atul Sunnah, in which many fuqaha like Abu Hanifa and others believed as well, which believe that good acts are the perfection of faith. They're not part of faith, but they're perfection of faith. Now, which one you subscribe to? Good acts are perfection of faith, or part of faith, or have no impact on faith at all? No relation. Manifestation of faith, so it's part of faith, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you cannot have faith without honesty, isn't it? Now, these are sort of polemical issues. We just have to move to other issues. And I do not advise any of you to get into these theological and polemical discussions, because it's somehow diverts our attention from more serious things. Now, mere knowledge may not lead to faith, like those who believe there is a creator but are indifferent towards him. We don't say that they have faith. We say that they say, okay, we don't care. There is a creator. We know that there is a creator, but so what? We don't care. So this is not faith. It's just mere knowledge. They have a knowledge that there is a creator, but they have no faith in God. Faith in God means to have a sort of conviction or attraction towards him. In the same way, mere confession of the tongue or action of the limb may not indicate the faith, like the hypocrites, isn't it? You may say, La ilaha illallah, but you may not believe in it. You may not have faith in it. So, we take all the three together to be representative of faith. It's the conviction which leads to action, certainly, and it is the conviction which has different levels and degrees. So, the core is actually that conviction, which can intensify or lessen. And is that conviction which is the gate to knowledge of God? Because faith is the gate to knowledge of God. By faith, you can know God more. And if you know him better, your faith would increase. And knowing him, for knowing him, you have no other way but a door from your heart, which is faith. And therefore, the gateway to God is this conviction, which is faith. And then, of course, knowledge of God would come. It intensifies the faith, and then it intensifies the actions, the devotion, the worship, and all these things. The conviction is strengthened by meditation. Okay, how does the faith increase? By purification of the soul, by sincerity, by continuous remembrance of God, and by other good actions, of course. Is there any other way that our conviction to God could be strengthened? Is there any other way? Of course, knowledge. But that knowledge comes through this conviction, isn't it? Yes, yes. And remembrance of God as well. That's very important, yes? Going through hardship, it increases your resolve. Probably if you show that resolve, it would show, probably it shows your conviction rather than increasing your conviction. It shows your conviction. And that's of course a good trial, isn't it? Going through hardship and showing your conviction to God. Now, why should we have conviction to God? Why should we have faith? Let's go to the square one. Why should we have faith? I mean, God has created us. Thank you very much. Okay. So why do you insist that we have to believe in you? Or we have conviction? And we... Really, why? Any idea? Gives us a sense of purpose. Anything more than that? Yes. Natural state of person. We fulfill. Yes. Okay. But why should it be that way? I mean, why should we fulfill the purpose by believing in God, or having faith in Him?
If we believe that it moves us, and it is the driver behind our actions, then it's the one, it's going to be the one that moves us. Nothing else. Nothing else.
Nothing else would move us.
If we believe,
or probably nothing would move us, or everything would move us, but God, isn't it? Sometimes. Sometimes. Yeah, perfection. That's the only, that's the sole thing which could give us perfection. Every other thought of perfection is just a mirage. It's just an imagination. There is no purpose, there is no perfection, except through that. And that's why God insists that we have to have faith in Him. And it's through faith that we gain that perfection. Of course, many of these things would find meaning when we leave this world. النَّاسُ نِيَامٌ فَإِذَا مَاتُوا انْتَبَهُوا. People are asleep. When they die, they wake up. When we die, we wake up. We see the realities, and we see how, of course, our purpose was really God and nothing else in this world, and how we move towards batil, towards things which were just mere imagination, away from God. So, it's very important. Faith is very, very important. In a secular society, little attention is given, little importance is attached to faith, because they think in a utilitarian way, in terms of akhlaq, that, okay, we behave in a way to give the biggest pleasure to the biggest number of people. That's a good akhlaq. Why should we need faith in God? Now, this is all based on forgetting that something else is coming. If we believe that something else is coming, and the perfection is different from biggest pleasure of the biggest number in this world, then, of course, faith will become very important. Eventually, now, when this conviction strengthens and intensifies, degree after degree, by that purification, it changes quality and turns into love. I have mentioned this, of course, previously, probably, that the difference between muqarrabun, those who are brought close to God, and ashabul yameen, ordinary believers, is that their worship is based on love, the muqarrabun, and ordinary people, ordinary believers' worship is based on faith, on conviction. And, of course, that conviction can turn into love through certain practice, which then would make a person to enter the realm of Muqarrabun and leave the realm of Ashabul Yameen. Now, sometimes we have conviction, but we show a different appearance. So, that conviction is the core of faith. And the importance of that conviction is explained by the verse related to plight of Ammar ibn Yasir. Now, you know, of course, the story of Ammar ibn Yasir. He believed along with his parents, and he was caught by kuffar. At a certain time, the kuffar decided to somehow prosecute the believers. Every tribe, they said, the believers in our tribe, we prosecute them. So Ammar ibn Yasir, Bilal, Khabbab ibn Arat, and others, and Ammar, along with his parents, they were caught and they were tortured. And you know that his parents were killed due to that persecution, and they were the first martyrs in Islam. Now, what happened to Ammar? Ammar was a young boy, a young man, and he couldn't bear the very gruesome torture they were giving him, so he uttered whatever they wanted. He, in a sense, he, they said, you have to reject Allah. He said, okay, I reject Allah. He said, you have to acknowledge that you worship our gods. They, he said, okay, I acknowledge, I worship your gods. And they set him free. Now he came to the Prophet with tears that I have become a kafir. They persecuted me, they tortured me, and I said whatever they wanted. Now, the Quran, certain verses were revealed saying that it is that conviction which is important in the heart, not what you may under certain circumstances show in terms of your behavior. The verse explains to some extent the nature of faith as well. Now, of course, the full explanation of this, we'll leave it for next week, inshallah. However, here, this verse is actually one of those verses which are used to justify taqiyya as well. That if you are persecuted and you have no other way to help yourself, you can say things which you do not believe in. Now, here the verse is, مَنْ كَفَرَ بِاللَّهِ مِنْ بَعْدِ إِيمَانِهِ إِلَّا مَنْ أُكْرِهَ وَقَلْبُهُ مُطْمَئِنٌ بِالْإِيمَانِ وَلَكِنْ مَنْ شَرَحَ بِالْكُفْرِ صَدْرًا فَعَلَيْهِمْ غَضَبٌ مِّنَ اللَّهِ وَلَهُمْ عَذَابٌ أَلِيمٌ. Whoever renounces faith in Allah after affirming his faith, like Ammar, okay? He denounced the faith after he had affirmed it, after he had believed. Now, he said, except, okay, barring someone who is compelled while his heart is at rest in faith, like Ammar. His heart was full of faith, but he was forced to say what they wanted. Here, this is of course in brackets. I don't mean those who are forced, but their heart is rest, at rest in faith. What I mean is those who open up their breast to unfaith. Upon such shall be Allah's wrath, and there is a great punishment for them. Now, you always take this great punishment, wrath, because of the malakat which comes with people. Allah hates those malakat which are evil. And that's why he is angry with anyone who is carrying those malakat, because they are hateful. Now, here, as I said, the conviction of the heart is taken to be the most important part of faith, even if you show or say something different. Now, the following verses actually talk about the root of faith and disbelief, which inshallah we'll discuss in our next session, and then we move on to see how akhlaq and faith are related to each other. We have 10 minutes for comments or questions or whatever. Yeah, the question is, if someone rejects faith, why would Allah would get angry with them rather than feeling pity for them? Of course, the anger of Allah is not like our anger. It can be construed as pity or whatever. Allah doesn't go angry like we go angry, because Allah is not moved like we are moved. We see the consequences of certain, or we see certain behavior of God, which would tell us this comes from a quality which we call in ourselves wrath. Otherwise, God doesn't have wrath in that sense. So, when people disbelieve, they develop certain traits, or they develop certain conviction of heart, which is hateful when we go to the next world. And that's why we are told in different traditions that these things would be embodied in hateful things, or good traits would be embodied in lovely and beautiful things, like a handsome man, for example, or like a garden of flowers, or something like that. So, because it's hateful, and because God would drive them away from himself, we say that God is angry with them. This is how we justify that. Yes? Yeah. The question is, we said that the fleeting qualities which we show are not part of our akhlaq, and they are not established traits. And therefore, for example, if out of certain situation we act generously, that doesn't mean we are generous. Now, is the opposite true as well? That, for example, we are always giving, we are generous, but at a certain moment or under certain circumstances, we do not want to give because of certain reasons. Is that the question? Yeah. Now, the answer is yes, of course. And a generous person may, due to certain reasons, not want to give at certain point. This does not take them out of that quality of generosity. It's just a fleeting moment. Otherwise, they would go back to that spontaneous sort of quality that they usually show from themselves. Yeah, the question is that the malakat, those qualities which are established in us, we see them in the hereafter. They actually accompany us. How are the fleeting sort of qualities which we occasionally show from ourselves, they do not obsess us, or they do not positively or negatively, they do not accompany us in the hereafter. Now, this is of course an established fact that Allah would forgive everything so long as they have not possessed us. We have a verse in the Quran which says, "Bala man kasaba sayyi'atan wa ahatat bihi khati'atuhu fa ulaika ashabun nar." Anyone who acquires an evil, sayyi'ah, and then the wrong of that, the evil of that, would surround them. And this means that you continuously do something which the evil would surround them, then they will go to hell. Otherwise, ordinary people, out of many different drives, occasionally do certain things. And this is what God has said, "Inna Allah yaghfiru dhunuba jami'a." Allah would forgive all sins. So when we want to come to analyze or explain God's forgiveness in the face of having hell, if God is forgiving, why should we have hell? We would say that, yes, anything which could be separated from us, from our personality, God will forgive. That means God will remove it. Anything which has become part of us and could not be separated from us, that would not go under the general rule of forgiveness, and then we are possessed by it, and unless we get freed from it in the course of time, some in one way or another. Yes. if a person's faith has the susceptibility to be reduced, does it mean that it's a true conviction or not? No, it's a true conviction. Our convictions may somehow be intensified or reduced in intensity due to certain reasons, certain circumstances. For example, if we continuously disregard certain things, that conviction would be reduced gradually. It's still there, but it would be reduced. Or if, for example, we observe certain things regularly, that conviction would increase. And that's why we are told to regularly do certain things to keep that conviction of faith, like, for example, daily prayers, daily du'as, all these things, because that keeps the conviction in place. What about them? Yeah, if we do not keep up with the regular instructions which we are given to protect the faith or that conviction, then certainly it goes on reducing, and at certain point it would disappear. So we have to be always careful about it, and to keep up to those instructions which we are told to follow, so that the conviction and faith would not go away, and rather than being reduced, increase day by day.
What would you say to a person who wants to attain perfection and has the best of malaka, the best of the best of actions, but doesn't have faith in God? It wants to attain that. Why is it necessary for that person to have faith in God?
Okay. The question is that if a person has all good malakat and all the perfections that we regard to be perfection in a human being, why would they need faith in God for perfection? Because they are already perfect. They have good malakat. Now, the answer is that the most important quality which leads to perfection and gives meaning to all other qualities is faith in God. Because everything but God, except God, is just an illusion, if we think about it. So they would just go away. After a person dies, if there is no faith, they would not hold. They somehow dissolve away from the person. And that's the importance of faith, which keeps them together. Okay, time's up. Thank you very much. Until next week, inshallah.